Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Tom.
And I'm Kurt.
And on this episode of Flash in the Pan, it's Spider-Man, Jim, but not as we know it.
Okay, my interest is piqued.
Am I wearing a red shirt right now?
We grew up in a world of online animation. And we're digging you out for your consideration. Bringing you the tunes that made us who we are. Flash in the Pan. Flash in the Pan.
Hi there. And welcome to another edition of Flash in the Pan. Lucky you, you made it.
Wow, welcome back.
Welcome back. This is, as always, your premier source of podcasting goodness about the animation that fueled the early internet. At least that's the tagline on our website, and so far, we seem to have stuck to that.
That's generally true.
This is a lovely special edition of the podcast because we have a guest. Whoa! Mr. Guest, please introduce yourself.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm Kurt, also known as the Great SG, or Gritsk if you prefer.
Gritsk.
Gritsk. I like that too. Yeah.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzk.
Hey.
So cool. It's lovely to have you with us. Please do begin by telling us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what your history with this strange medium known as Flash has been.
I am a editor of a podcast hosted by my partner and their best friend called Ranger Splain. It's a Power Rangers episodic podcast going series by series. You can check out wherever you find podcasts. And my own, I've just been an internet denizen for close to 25 years now because I'm old.
I'm trapped in here with the rest of us, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And just been a long time just fan person. I've been doing a panels at various fandom conventions for over 15 years now. In my free time, I like to do pixel perler art stuff, which I beat out and everything and make available for sale and also display and such. Just do a little bit of this and that everywhere.
Cool.
That's neat, yeah. And what about Flash? Were you a cartoon watcher? Were you a cartoon maker?
Oh, yeah, pretty much since we first got internet in my house, even in the pre-cable internet in our old dial-up days. I remember in the late 90s, playing the old Punch a Celebrity games through like the old Macromedia Shockwave.
Oh gosh, yeah.
But with Flash cartoons themselves, I'm pretty sure, like, this is really dating myself. I remember when Joe Cartoon was the thing to watch.
Oh yeah, of course.
Which I want to say I first saw thanks to my aunt, who is a career social worker, and it was something she saw in her office and shared with me at like the age of 12 or 13.
I mean, so I watched from what I know about social work, it's definitely the kind of stressful career where you get back to the office and all you really want to do is blend a frog. So
yeah.
She had a lot of fun with the Kill the Boss short that was on that
website. Oh, I'm sure she did. Yeah.
But yeah, I'd start watching some of those on my own and finding other of like the very early, like weird, like Flash, like animation websites. And somehow through that is how I discovered one of the things we'll be talking about here a bit later.
Yeah.
And from there, like I did watch a bunch of Joe Cartoon and some of the other early Flash websites that were around, like the one that gave us Napster Bad.
Yes.
There was one called Kill Frog I remember I watched, and I think that's actually how I discovered one of the things we'll be talking about today as well, back then.
Well, that is a pretty good way to segue, because, actually, no, before we start, as always, we should mention that if you would like to watch along with us, Flashketeers, you can do so at our website, flashinthepancast.com, where you'll find links to all the cartoons we talk about. Also, if you enjoy what you hear, then we do have a Patreon. Wow. Flash in the Pan on Patreon. Well, there'll be more details about that later on. But for now, Kurt, would you like to tell us what cartoon we're going to be watching first?
Okay, so this first cartoon is something that this thing has lived rent-free in my head for a long time, and it is a very silly little animation called The Senile Spider-Man.
Peter Parker, a white unified Spider-Man.
Oh my god, I found him!
Amazing.
Oh no, Spider-Man possessing me!
Yes!
Oh no!
What? Oh god. It gets me every time.
It's fucking incredible.
So,
wow.
Yeah, that was Seedile Spider-Man. Short but sweet.
Yep. As I said, this thing has lived rent-free in my head for probably 12 years or more.
So we're going to see this referenced in the next Spider-Verse movie, right?
Like, oh, you know, if only.
You know,
I mean, they referenced the meme image with Spider-Man sat in the chair with a picture of himself in the background.
And the Spider-Man pointing.
And Spider-Man pointing.
With the multiverse, there is definitely a Marvel universe out there where their Spider-Man is this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, obviously... So obviously, in the big film version adaptation of Seenile Spider-Man, he's definitely going to be played by Jack McBrayer, right?
Ooh, I like 100%, that
100%.
Because that is almost exactly the same voice as him.
It really is. The line "Spider-Man's possessing me" has lived rent free in my head. Like, I will think of that and just giggle to myself and try to explain it to anybody else. Doesn't help.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, Alex, I know this is a big task, but do you think you can explain the plot to us?
Okay.
Don't strain yourself.
Let me say what I think is happening. I'm pretty sure this is J. Jonah Jameson, right?
Yeah.
Or whoever the head of the Daily Bugle is at the time this is taking place, is talking with Peter Parker, who's like, I don't fucking know, like 80 years old in this, I'm going to assume. And he's like, oh, you found Spider-Man. And Peter Parker's just slowly, like, getting dressed as Spider-Man, putting his costume on, and as everyone has said here already, is like, oh, Spider-Man possessing me. And then he just punches out J. Jonah Jameson, and that's it. That's the end. That is absolutely perfect. Like, the fucking comedic timing of the punch and the ending absolutely fucking makes this.
Well, to me, what I think, what always crack me up, it's like less a punch, more he just kind of like whacks him on the side,
slaps him.
Yeah, like bonk.
It's the perfect sound effect as well. Like, it's not a stock punch noise. They've quite obviously like foleyed it themselves, which I really appreciate that effort.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah.
So the animation is itself is very simple.
Yeah.
Quite.
Like, the mouths remind me of Bonus Stage. But also, like, it's this very simple, it's just, like, a single gag. But one thing I do like is, when he becomes full Spider-Man, when Spider-Man is possessing him, like, we do get, like, this weird quivering in his arms, which looks like, appropriately, disturbed, I thought.
Yeah.
I do like that when he's tucking the glove on, they're using just like the sort of asset stretch thing in Flash to make it look like the glove is stretching. The actual character designs are just kind of lumpy. they are this is definitely not particularly artistically adept, but then it doesn't need to be because it's just a stupid little gag. And honestly, the writing is, it's weird to say the writing when this is like three jokes, but
the turn of phrase like is great. It's fucking mm-hmm. fantastic. Yeah. Like I completely understand why the phrase "Spider-Man is possessing me" would live in your head rent free forever, because it's the kind of thing that like you would only hear in this cartoon only here.
So, yeah. Should I explain, like, my history of where I first saw this?
Please.
Absolutely.
So, as I mentioned at the beginning, I've been doing panels at various fan conventions, mostly anime and sci-fi fantasy cons for a while, and for a number of years, around like the end of the 2000s and early 2010s, there was a convention called Anime USA that was in the Washington, D.C. area I'd go to and stay with some friends of mine who were in Virginia. And we ran a panel there, an 18-plus event that was called Worst of the Internet, which would just be weird videos, and a lot of it was like flash files and animations and things. My friend Matt, who ran the panel, he would just save everything he could off the old 4chan flash board.
That's a real mixed bag right there.
Oh, yeah. It was. Yeah, they're just, it was always like, we always had a good turnout. We would change up the format of every, we had like some very weird game show formats. We had kind of a Wheel of the Worst one year that we could like dry erase and write like new categories in with the loose space was like a Robotnik face. I think that wheel's still in my storage.
Nice.
But because like it was three or four of us like just all pulling together our resources, and like when we get together at the convention, Matt's just like, hey, you want the whole library of everything I got for the panel? I'm like, yeah, sure. And just after one of the years, I was just going through all the stuff, and I don't even think we actually used this clip in any of the panels. It never came up. But I just saw something titled Senile Spider-Man and just clicked it. I'm just like, what? And it's was in my head ever since. And forever, I didn't even know who made this, but Tom, you actually found the guy's DeviantArt who made this. And
yeah, we can talk about that more in a bit. But yeah, yeah. It was a fun little archaeology trip. It was quite short, but it was quite fun. I like that kind of thing. Like I do very much enjoy the, like, it takes work, but I do very much enjoy the research part of this podcast.
Yeah, because I tried looking on Newgrounds for it and never could find it, because I figured it had to come from there, and I was just lucky I even found it here recently for this episode. I'm like, oh, that was the name of it, and sent it your way.
yeah, of course. So this feels like it was made in, like, 2000, partially because it's... partially because the sound mixing is bad and extremely loud. Partially because so on the title screen, like, we've got the Spider-Man logo. I suppose this would be from at least 2002, because this is the Spider-Man logo from the first Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
In the PlayStation 3 font. but yeah, it's all like JPEG crushed and so on. Like, there isn't even a replay button at the end of it, so this is very rudimentary in the way it's put together. So that would be my guess. I am also, I don't know, I am interested in whether this made any inroads in comic fandom or anything? Or if it's just a silly one of, I don't know. And like, it feels like, the fact that it has been so important for you somehow makes me assume that maybe it like made a bigger impact elsewhere somehow.
I think it's only important to me. And maybe the handful of people who commented on the DeviantArt.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine too. That's because it's time for some Flash.
It looks like this was made in 2006, and there's a great little descriptor by Psychopop, who made this animation, where he wrote, "Based on a comic I drew 2 days ago at 8:40 a.m. I'm glad he knows the exact time he drew the comic.
That's pretty good, yeah.
The comic version also had senile Superman falling asleep in midair and flying into a wall, as well as the incompetent Batman complaining about me making too many comics about them, hence explaining why he is introducing his other super friends, Superman and Spider-Man."
Well, I'm sad that we don't seem to have got a full series out of this.
Mm.
Yeah, so Psychopop, the artist, is someone that... So yeah, I just... little peek behind the curtain. So Kurt linked this to me and said, hey, I don't know where this is from, but I want to talk about this on the podcast.
Yep.
So I start searching for The Senile Spider-Man as a thing on DuckDuckGo, because, you know, Google's not good for searching anymore.
No.
And it takes me to, it doesn't really take me anywhere. So I try searching it on Newgrounds, nothing. Albino Black Sheep, nothing. On DeviantArt, yes, there is a deviation called The Senile Spider-Man by someone called Psychopop. However, the Flash file doesn't work anymore. You have to actually download it to get it to play. So I was messaging Kurt, and like, I don't know what time of night it was, but I was like saying, hey, is this the guy? Because it won't work. But we were able to confirm it, luckily. So that's fun. It's interesting that, so Psychopop doesn't seem to have that much of an online presence outside of a few DeviantArt things. They have a very small online footprint, it seems.
And they were still active as of about 5 years ago. They posted a piece of art.
Yeah. They posted some Stranger Things fan art, and their artistic abilities have definitely grown in the many years since they made this, so that's cool. But as for what they're doing now, it is difficult to tell.
So that Stranger Things art, it's the Stranger Thing kids in the Scooby-Doo style.
That's cute.
I also appreciate this piece they did of Klaus Nomi answering a phone incorrectly.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, there's a piece of art they did that is Klaus Nomi answering a rotary phone, but he's got the base of the phone up to his ear, saying, "Yes, hello, this is Klaus."
That's beautiful. Good. I'm looking at it now. That's very good. If I had to guess, this would be someone who's got a regular rest of their life, but is still a fan of making little doodles and cartoons and so on. It's kind of an enigmatic figure, it seems.
So I do wonder if this artist is possibly in the UK or is just a fan of Ashens, because they drew a piece of art called Poundland Sandshrew that looks to be the Pokemon Sandshrew sitting on Ashen's couch.
I mean, it sounded like an American accent in the cartoon, but like, could have been an accent.
They're probably just a fan of Ashens.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, seen our
convincing accent.
But yeah, seen our Spider-Man doesn't seem to show up on YouTube or anything like that. So
yeah, you found a real
hidden gem here.
Yeah,
Kurt.
That's what I aim to do.
I don't know. Psychopop, if you're out there and you're somehow listening to this, then hi. Hope you're doing well. I don't know what to say. Like, we got basically nothing, but the nothing that we do have is quite entertaining. So thank you.
It was a funny cartoon. We got a good laugh. Thank you.
I think part of why it's been on my mind again is the second season of Pop Team Epic started up here a couple weeks ago. And this animation just always feels like what people call a shit post.
Yes.
It is shit posty, right. Yeah.
It very much feels like the kind of skit you could see in Pop Team Epic, and I appreciate
100%, that. 100%.
Unfortunately, that means that we have a limited crop of comments, but this will be representative, I think, of most people's reactions. You know what? I'll take the first one, because I think we only have a few very short ones, but I'll take the first one. Mario Bro 64, on September 24th, 2006, commented on this. These are all on DeviantArt, by the way. Commented saying, "Yay for random crap, full stop." So that full stop making it sound a little bit sarky. I don't know.
Huxtable Jones? On the same day, September 24th, 2006, said, "Yeah, ha 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 ha, I think I peed a little."
Great, cool, perfect. Right.
I sure hope you did that in a convenient place.
Oh dear. And hey, Kurt, yes. would you like to grace us with probably the most in-depth and really revealing comment of the bunch?
Yeah, I think it was one of the last comments on it, all the way on November 14, 2008 from Dog Art Comics, who just said, best thing ever.
Well.
And that's, you know, Spider-Man.
The reviews are in.
I agree with that sentiment. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, Spider-Man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's a silly little shitpost that is very, very funny and also mysterious. But there's a reason that we started with something so small. It's because the main event is something much more substantial.
Whoa.
We are going to be going... we are going to be going into a fandom space that we haven't actually breached before. Because we're going to be looking at the first three episodes of Stone Trek. That's episode one, The Deadly Ears. Episode two, 20,001 BC, A Space Odyssey. And episode three, Star Trekkin' Music Video.
What did you do to yourself this time? You got stung in the ears. By alien bees, can you believe it? His ears? Oh no. Listen to that weirdly placed heart of his, okay. Give him a life-saving blood transfusion, maybe. But touch those pointed monstrosities! Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a Q-tip!
As usual, the good doctor is utilizing his vast medical skills to his utmost ability.
Stop, Sprock, and put some clothes on. It's only your ears! But what are we gonna do? I need him in the bridge cave. You can have him. And my book is cleared for duty. Spock, wait up!
So, that was an awful lot of Star Trek and Flintstones jokes, but mostly Star Trek jokes. It just looks like the Flintstones.
Pretty much.
Goodness gracious, where to begin with this?
It is so inexplicable to me that these have thousands of views. Like,
so full disclosure, because I didn't watch this beforehand, and I think there might have been a bit of miscommunication, or just me having bad reading comprehension, because Kurt, when you were telling me that you had that you wanted to cover a Star Trek parody series called Stone Trek, I mentally passed that as Stoned Trek and assumed it would be just nothing but weed jokes.
I would watch that too, though.
That arguably would have been better.
So I was prepared for a very different experience from the one we got.
I gave you plenty of heads up on it, so hey.
But having said that, this doesn't completely suck.
I disagree. I hated this. I absolutely fucking hated this.
Okay, well, tell you what, let's do a compliment sandwich then, and I'll start with my thoughts. I think that that it is occasionally quite funny. They committed to the what if Star Trek, but it's the Flintstones thing pretty well.
Yeah.
Especially in the character and set designs so for those of you who aren't old, the Flintstones one of the best recurring gags in the Flintstones is that it's modern technology but made with rocks and sticks and using little dinosaurs and animals and so on. And they do commit to that pretty much in this. I'm sad that like there wasn't like a little bird inside like their tricorders or whatever. But you know, like they do pretty well with it. Like the design of the not the Enterprise, what's it called? The Magnetize?
The Stone Ship Magnetize.
The Stone Ship Magnetize. the design of it's pretty cool, right? It looks very Flintstonesy. All of the uniforms have like the kind of like torn off edges and like visible stitching and so on. Like it looks good. Especially for something made 22 years ago.
Yeah, this
the first episode came out in what, 2000?
2000.
And the second 2001.
Yep.
Especially for something of that era, it looks very consistent. It's got some good very Hanna-Barbera style comic timing. They use a lot of the old sound effect library and so on, which I liked. And also there are some jokes that are actually funny. It's definitely not most of the jokes, but it's some of them. You can tell that they put in an enormous amount of effort, especially given the technology they're using at the time.
Oh, yeah.
However, it's also, I mean, obviously, I'm not a Star Trek person. I don't think Alex is that much either.
Not really.
So there are some things which I'm just not going to get. But even then, these feel like very surface level parodies that I might expect to see in, like, I don't know, a Mad Magazine comic strip and like, right, a lower tier one.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, like, this is like a classic nerds love when you put two things together thing. And there's only so much mileage you can get out of that.
When I was revisiting these, that was the immediate thought that came to mind. We only watched the first two episodes in the music video that counts as episode
three.
Which
is still 25 minutes of content.
The other two episodes, episode four is just a spoof on the episode of Star Trek, The Man Trap. And the last one made, which came out all the as late as, I think, 2006, is mostly a spoof of Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
So they ran out of Star Trek content.
Yeah, that one, the last two episodes, I had never seen them before, because the creator of this, like, this was just a thing he did on the side for fun, and he talked about in old interviews,
right,
that,
yeah,
it, like, it, there, and there were, I remember when I found it, like, part one of the of episode two, the 2001 A Space Odyssey parody, had come out like a month before, and there was about two or three more months before part two finally came out, and then another couple of months before that Star Trek in video came out, and then I kind of forgot about this for a number of years.
So Alex, I know that you're champing at the bit to have your voice heard.
go
for it, let him have it.
Why did you make five episodes of this? This should have been a one-off. That's okay. It. Like, what? I don't. This, they didn't need to do any more than just like the one. It's how fucking, like, I've already forgotten how long the first one was. It's already gone out of my head.
Two episodes, 5 minutes each.
So ten.
So the first adventure is 10 minutes.
And 10 minutes is already kind of pushing it, right? Like, that's already too long.
The last episode is over 15 minutes long, and I was just like, it was exhausting.
I mean, I did enjoy, like Tom said, like, they, you know, they committed to the bit, and hats off to them for, you know, really sticking to it. I did enjoy, like, when they're in the elevator and it's like a dinosaur peddling.
Yeah.
That was kind of cute.
Although none of the dinosaurs that we've seen at any point go, it's a living.
Which
I was disappointed by.
Yeah, I was disappointed by it. I thought that the monkey that they were using to, like, clean up the green earwax, that's fucking disgusting, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was going to go like, it's a living, but he fucking didn't. So, no. 0 out of 10.
Yeah. See, okay, so... We should actually talk about what happens in these episodes, because they do have vague plots. No, they're not even vague plots. They, like, the first one especially has, like, an actual, like, this is the plot of an episode of something. Yeah. Plot. Yeah. Complete with cliffhanger. So, in the first one, the rock ship Magnetize is flying through space, having adventures, but first of all, they're on an alien planet, and some space bees take a liking to not Spock but Sprock, they who is a volcano. if you take a shot every time there is a rock pun, you are dead by the end of episode one. So they take a liking to Sprock's ears because they think they're antennae, because haha, he's got pointy ears. And then when he swats them away, they decide to sting his ears. And then over the course of the episode, the ears just keep on just growing and swelling and inflating to the point where they fill first the entire bridge and then just poke out of the ship as giant ears attached to the ship, which is definitely someone's fetish.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm sorry, but this kind of very, very niche and specific expansion of body parts to the point of encumbrance and causing a threat to those around you is absolutely getting someone off. And, like, no shame if that's your thing, but goodness me, what a thing to be activated
by. But can Sprock flap his ears?
We don't know. We know he can wiggle them. We know he can wiggle them because he asks if they've heard of. Hold on, I wrote this down. Volcano ear wiggling. So they're prehensile ears, kind of. Anyway, he uses that to. So the bees attack them because they feel disrespected, and then he uses his ear wiggling to save the day, not once but twice, by throwing. By just wiggling them enough that a bunch of green earwax flies out and like engulfs the swarm of bees, which isn't pleasant.
No.
But then Sprock is like, "Oh no, these bees are going to drown in my horrible earwax."
I don't understand why he's suddenly like, "Oh no, this." I thought that was like the point. I thought that was what he was trying to do.
So, from my limited experience of Star Trek, I do know that a lot of the episodes consist of, oh no, it's a terrible space monster. Wait, the space monster has feelings? We must protect it.
Yeah, the respect of sentient life is a big core of Star Trek.
Yeah, so obviously he decides that they should rescue the bees, and so they do, and then, oh no, his ears are still big, what's going to happen? Then the ears just explode. And the last shot is them. Sorry, and the climax is them like walking into the room where Spock is, and he's just surrounded by ear debris.
He's also got like floppy ears like a dog, which I thought was interesting.
Well, because they inflated and then they burst.
Yeah,
right?
So I just thought it was kind of interesting to see like floppy ears on like a, a human. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, then the punchline is that he the ears just regrow because Vulcanos have a spare pair of ears for just this situation.
Yeah. Me too, honestly.
Bring in the Star Trek nerd moment here. There is an episode, it's The Next Generation, where Worf has to undergo a surgery, and due to the fact he has redundancy, like, organs, they think he's dead and he comes back to life at the last minute. And I just wondered if that was a reference to that.
I don't know. I think it might just be a reference to the fact that Spock is a weird alien whose body is weird.
Yeah, probably.
Is that why his earwax is green? Because Vulcans have green blood?
Most probably. Likely.
Hmm.
Anyway, I think you've already put more thought into this than they did.
Anyway, yeah, and then the second episode is the crew come across a ship floating in the middle of nowhere. Oh no, it's just the ship from 2001. And they just do 2001.
Yeah.
And it is not funny at all. And it goes on for ages. And there are like three good jokes in the entire 10-minute span.
I zoned out during that episode, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't watching for most of it.
So for the first episode, the artist and animator of this, Brian Matthews, he wrote the first episode, but the rest of them he turned over to a friend of his who he had like worked on like a comic book with in the 80s. According to some interviews, a man named Jim Jenkins, not to be confused with the creator of the cartoon Doug, but I couldn't believe it's the same guy because the humor is just as bad as Doug's.
The 2001 parody, well, I say parody, it's just 2001, but also they do rock jokes around it, ends with Captain Kirkstone getting sucked into the monolith and meeting a bunch of other William Shatner characters.
William Shatrock.
He's a character.
Which is funny in its own way to say Shatrock.
it is, yeah. I mean, that's the answer to the question, what happened to the bathroom?
Hey!
William Shatrock.
Hey!
That's kind of it. It doesn't really go anywhere. No. But we sure get to see a lot of Flintstones-styled William Shatner characters, only two of whom I recognize.
I'll give him credit for the obscurity of going for Barnaby Coast, the cowboy detective series Shatner did in the 70s briefly.
I'm sorry, a cowboy detective?
I think that was the name of it, was Barnaby Coast.
Called Barnaby Coast. Fantastic. Yeah, I only recognize TJ Hooker. And even
Barbary Coast was the name of it.
It's fine, it's very affectionate ribbing, but also, I'm not a Star Trek person, but even I recognized the jokes they were making as jokes that had already been done. William Shatner is fat. Or, the red shirts sure die a lot. There's even a red shirt kill count, which we can talk about later, because there are some fun Easter eggs about that. Alex and I have rambled too long. Kurt, how do you like this? Tell us what this means to you.
So I first found this back in high school. As I mentioned earlier, I think part one of the 2001 episode was out, and it was a couple months before the part two came out. I kind of remember just being like, really? That's it? And I was kind of at the time, I was kind of intrigued. I'm pretty sure I found this in a link on I want to say it was Kill Frog, another Flash animator site. He had links to other people who had sites like this, and that was how I discovered Stone Trek. And I'm just like, at first it's like, okay, here's Star Trek mixed with the Flintstones, two 60s popular properties. That's kind of a funny gag, but yeah, it's one of those. Trying to make it into a series, definitely just it's one joke done interminably, and then just immediately going into just we already are parodying two things, let's throw in a third thing too with no actual jokes. It's just, I recognize this, that's funny, but it's not.
It's classic nerd humor. Yeah. If you recognize it, then you laugh,
exactly.
You scream with glee.
Yeah, I'm confused because, you're right. There is definitely a downgrade in the writing from episode 1 to 2. And because I'm sure that a different writer would have actually changed anything about the 2001 thing. Because we get Hal, who's just called Hal, which baffles me.
Yeah.
Right? And also, it's meant to be the Flintstones, so why is Hal not, I don't know, a little dinosaur guy in a booth or something, right? But also, what baffles me is that they just lift Hal's dialogue from the film. Yep. There are no jokes, nothing is rewritten, they just kind of... it could just be sound clips taken from the movie and you wouldn't notice. And that strikes me as... very strange in terms of parody, right? Because all of the other scenes, to give them credit, they put a lot of work into almost shot for shot recreating some of the moments from 2001, right? The bit where he's walking down the octagonal hallway looks amazing, and the bit where Sprock is pulling all the data cards out of Hal's server stack or whatever it is. Looks really good. But then the only joke is that, oh no, the captain's being crushed by the door. And oh no, it crushed his balls.
And that's funny. You got it.
So little happens, and it's a real shame because it could... be really funny, or at least be a much more interesting parody than what we get. I don't know, that's just my onion, but
in the other two episodes it just kind of ramps up in all of that, and it's really bad in the last one because it is just straight up just redoing scenes from Star Wars, mostly Episode 1 and A New Hope.
That's
awful.
That's a very odd decision. I'm saying this as an outsider to being a Trekkie or Trekker or Trekster or whatever the appropriate term is. I don't know which T words are appropriate. I apologize.
Jesus Christ.
But surely... The last thing that you would want as a Star Trek fan, even a casual Star Trek fan, from your Star Trek parody series is just to do Star Wars when you have decades of Star Trek content you can riff on?
Oh yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It feels like a lot of missed opportunities, which is a shame because on the surface, this could be, if you have the, if you're willing to commit to doing a series, right? Obviously, you've got your work cut out for you because you've got to stretch one joke. But at least if you're but at least if you're stretching the one joke, there are so many directions you can stretch it towards. So yeah, I don't know. It's not. I don't think it's terrible. It is definitely watchable. I don't know if I'll watch it again. I would definitely bring this up in conversation with a Star Trek fan friend and say, "Hey, did you ever watch?" And they might go,
"They would probably say, no, what the fuck is that?"
That's happened to me.
It was one of these, it's like,
did nobody watch this? But then I look on the YouTube and there's just people who's like, oh man, I love this. This is so funny. And I'm just like,
it is not. You're incorrect. I hate this for making me listen to that fucking Star Trekking song again.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So like, let's talk about episode 3, which is a music video ? For the song Star Trekkin' by The Firm.
Life, Jim, but not as we know it, not as we know it. It's life, but not as we know it, not as we know it.
We can get into the details of that song in a bit, but I will say that I've heard Star Trekkin' before a few times, partially because, for some reason, back when I worked in a toy shop, that was on the rotation of music that would play, not during business hours, but that like my manager would just put on while we were like doing inventory.
Late at night.
It was part of the rotation.
Oh god, that sounds like hell.
And yeah, this is one of the most irritating songs ever put down.
Fucking awful. I heard it like first, I think in like the early 2000s, a friend sent it to me and I listened to it and pretended to like it to be polite. And was like, I hope I never have to hear that again. And today my worst nightmare has come true.
Yeah.
The Stone Trek music video was the first time I ever heard the song, all the way back in 2001.
Like, the video is dynamic, you know, it's got a lot of stuff going on, at least for the first two thirds of it. They have a lot more fun with the animation and some of the staging and so on. We finally get to see the Klingons, who are all Dino from the Flintstones.
Yeah, I think he calls them the Klingonosaurs or something.
God. Oh, I fucking hate this thing so much. Fucking awful. Wow. Really inventive, guys. The Klingon... Oh.
But yeah, it's just, hey, here are the Star Trek characters. Like, did they record a new version of the vocals for this?
No, this is how it sounds.
Yeah. I think they just inserted the voice actor. He does one line in it as their version of Bones Fossil.
Yeah. So there's not much more to say about the Star Trek thing. It is unlistenable, but it's cute, I guess. Hey, they're having fun with it. And at the end you see a bunch of red shirt angels. Which is nice. We'll get onto that in a sec. I do have one last question before we move on, which is, where the fuck are the Jetsons?
That's a good point.
Surely, funny enough, like the Flintstone Star Trek people meeting just the regular Jetsons, you could get at least five jokes out of that. And that's enough for 20 whole minutes of this, apparently.
So the, yeah. The creators of this, they did mention in some interviews, I think even in one of the YouTube comments from the writer said they thought their idea of like doing something in the Jetson style would have been with the TNG cast, because they felt that would have been more fitting to do a TNG Jetsons thing. And it's kind of hard to navigate the guy's website that he had for this, because there is a page on there that is just like a whole set of other TV shows. It's like, what if I Dream of Jeannie, but Star Trek, or the Jetsons, but Star Trek.
They already do I Dream
Lost
of Jeannie
in Space,
and Star
but
Trek.
Star
they
Trek.
They already did I Dream of Jeannie and Star Trek. Basically. Like, how many episodes are there where they're just, like, trapped in the Enterprise in the same way that Ginny and co. are trapped in the Genie Lab or whatever? How many fucking episodes of Star Trek are there which are just, hey, what if this weird thing happened? Uh-oh.
Like, isn't that every episode?
I am actually turning towards Alex's opinion on this. We need to move on.
It's fucking awful.
We need to move on before I start writing hate mail. Okay. Look, I mean, like
the five Star Trek fans are going to be
really,
really,
yeah, really
like,
angry.
Really hit the inbox.
With all due respect, right? Especially for 2000-2001, it looks pretty damn good. It is pretty consistent with what it does, and you can tell that a lot of work went into something that was just done as a hobby, right?
Yeah.
The soundtracking, they even have the insipid laugh track from the Flintstones.
I couldn't decide if that made it better or worse.
Yeah.
Honestly.
If I remember right, Brian Matthews said, like, because he didn't have full access to a sound library, he would, like, just... he recorded the laugh track stuff he'd take from just recording it off of like comedy specials he had on tape.
Oh, wow. Okay, also, in terms of missed opportunities, right? Why is Uhura not like Betty or Wilma? Okay? Why is... So we've got Shatner as Fred Flintstone, fine, that works, but like, why isn't there a Barney Rubble? Why isn't Chekhov Barney Rubble? You know?
I think they were trying to make the Bones character look a bit like Barney. Like, that's the one that's weird, because he doesn't look like he doesn't look like any character I recall in Flintstones. I don't remember anybody having a pink
nose. He looks like a political cartoon.
Yeah. But the Uhura kind of has a vaguely kind of Betty look to her.
Oh, sure, but, like, she doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and I think that was just... they didn't have a woman to voice anything, because he just hired a guy who could do, like, had, like, voice samples on his website at the time in the year of 2000. It's like, here's my Shatner, here's my Sulu, here's my Spock, and hired him to do the voices.
We have to mention that it is unfortunate that Sulu is just drawn as slightly yellow with squinty eyes.
Can we talk about the fucking What Are We Savages joke? And it cuts to a black person, a Chinese person, and it's like, wow, cool, nice, good job, guys.
The only thing I could say is at least he did not copy... for Sulu, he did not make the Sulu character look like the very racist karate dojo instructor that is in an episode of the actual Flintstones.
Yeah.
That is like the full-on, what's his name, who did the awful yellow face in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Mickey Rooney?
But it's literally that. Yeah, the Mickey Rooney, dear. Like, racist Asian character.
That, yeah. Well, points for that, at least. But yeah, like, it's...
but it's still bad.
It's not bad. I bet if it was 2001, we would find it at least slightly more entertaining, because we would have been 10 years old.
Yes, you would have been 10. I was...
I've learned a very upsetting fact about Star Trek, and I don't know if you researched this song at all, Tom, but I've learned a very upsetting fact about this song.
Well, okay, before we get into upsetting facts, we have to do a thing. Kurt, would you like to do the honors?
Flash!
So, this brings us to our cool, interesting, potentially troubling background facts. Alex, would you like to start with something you've learned about Star Trek?
Jesus Christ, I can't believe this is true. So... this song was released in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It actually made it to number one in the UK singles chart in that year.
Wow.
That says a lot about us as a country. We are so fucking unfunny. It is.
Yeah, I mean, y'all put Little Jimmy Osmond as a number one hit artist, so.
You know what? Yeah. That's my upsetting fact.
The UK charts are a desolate and bizarre place.
There's something else on the track listing for Star Trekking. There's a B-side called Dub Trek, and I don't ever want to know what that is.
Okay, so I forgot about this, but in the credits for this, all of the characters and actors have jokey rock names. So Scotty is actually called Shoddy, played by Jimmy Dune. Nichelle Nickel plays Lieutenant Uhiria. That's not even a rock pun.
No.
But she listens. She's got the conch in her ear.
Lieutenant Silu is played by George K. Tay, which is either a reference to K2, the second tallest mountain in the world, or KTEL, the Canadian telecoms company.
Take your pick, listeners.
Or just very lazy.
Take your pick. Anyway, yeah, Kurt, you've done some pretty deep diving into the secret origins of Stone Trek. So would you like to regale us?
Yeah, so when I brought this up to do this on the show, I'm like, I wonder if I can still find anything on the creator of this. And because I was certain that there was no way this was still existing, because the website, you go to stonetrek.com, it's a dead link. And somebody had uploaded these to YouTube a couple of years ago. This person runs a website dedicated to Star Trek fan parodies and fan films. And he's like, this is one of the greatest Star Trek parodies ever. Okay. And he had interviewed the creators, and I found that interview, which was done around 2016, as well as an earlier one done in 2006. But, the creator of this, Brian Matthews, it's sad that like a lot of his original art and portfolio stuff that was on his website is mostly dead picture links now, because a couple of the pieces that show up, it's obvious he's a very talented artist. Like, he went to the Ringling Animation School back in the mid-80s and just did this as like a side project. And it looks like Stone Trek started out as just what if Star Trek and the Flintstones were combined, and he just made a little drawing for every episode of Star Trek with the Flintstones parody title and little drawing, and then just started animating some ideas for it. And that's how we got this. And he brought in a guy who he knew who could write, apparently, because they worked on a comic together. He's mentioned in the 80s called Dark Star, unrelated to the movie. But that guy started writing after episode 2 and onward, and his thing just seemed to be the whole, like, I'm just gonna reference other material because people just like, I recognize that's funny, even though it's not. And most of the voices were done by a guy named Wally Fields, who I think what he said was he just found Wally's website where he was offering, it's like, hey, I'll do voiceover work, here's my rate, and had him do pretty much all the voices except for a couple throughout. I think some of the red shirts, which those were fans who could like submit in. It's like, hey, you want to be a red shirt that gets killed off? I'll do a caricature of you for it. So I guess people send in photos, sometimes voice clips, because a couple of them are voiced over in the later two episodes, the last two.
Yeah, well, also there were a couple, it feels like, yeah, there were a couple of submissions from other people, because the voice of the chipmunk who's being used as a broom,
yeah,
is like of like sounds like it was recorded over the phone.
It does. Yeah, I think he probably might have filled it in himself or had somebody he knew do it with just like whatever onboard mic they had. Because that's one thing I can say, at least the main characters, like, sounds like they were recorded with decent equipment, which was surprising for any Flash animation at this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's obviously like that Matthews is a decent animator in it, because like he has the style stays pretty consistent. Like, it kind of captures that Flintstones aesthetic and the kind of limited animation of Hanna-Barbera TV decently well. There's some creative, like, it looks creative for, you know, the gag of Star Trek technology and the Flintstones.
Mm.
But that only does carry you so far.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that and we'll link this in the show notes because it's a beautiful archive. If you go to the Angel Fire website.
Oh, yes.
Of the creator.
Yes.
So unfortunately, stonetrek.com doesn't work anymore, and nor does the site's Flash menu, but at the bottom of the page is just a bunch of banner links to various Star Trek crossover parodies. So we've got Stone Trek, we've got Lost in Trek, Sea Trek, Toilet Trek, The Trexans, Trek Rats, The Trekkie Bunch, Sign Trek. But if you click through, most of them have, like, a cast illustration and some kind of silly writing to go along with it. And Alex, I would like you, please, as our biggest Trek head, I would like you to read for our lovely Flash Gateers, Toilet Trek.
This is all very unpleasant. There is a 3D, I want, just for the listeners, there is a 3D image, 3D render of the Enterprise where they've changed it so that it looks like a toilet. Beyond the rim of the toilet, Klingies and Rumpulans spoil it. I know I'll find in oh, crap crusted reaches scum and hairballs and half eaten peaches. I know my cleansing ends never. The star pot will go on forever. Remind me when my mission is complete. Remember to put down the seat. And then we have the aforementioned 3D render in the middle. Sewage, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starport. Sanitize. Its mission to expunge strange new turds. Oh, to snake out new pipes. Hey now. Start new sanitizations to boldly, spelt with a W, clean where no one has cleaned before. And then there is like an image of the cast of Star Trek. They're all in bathrobes and towels for some reason.
Yeah, and it says from left to right, Mr. Spew You, Lieutenant You Hershey.
Oh yeah,
Mr. Splop,
Mr. Splop,
kneeling.
Mr. Splop. He is kneeling.
Kneeling, Captain Croc, Doctor Humroid, Nurse Crapple, and Mr. Scrot.
Mr. Scrot.
So, Alex, would you be surprised if I told you that the poem you read is actually a filking of the original lyrics to the Star Trek theme?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Because that is the case, yeah.
I was reading it, I was like, that last bit, I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely okay. Star Trek.
I'm scrolling down to the bottom of the page where I'm clicking the link that says, flush me out.
There's a counter! Oh, it's an Angel Fire website, of course there's a counter.
Yeah. Anyway, shit, we got very in the weeds there. what is there left to say about Stone Trek?
It's terrible and I hate it.
In the first episode, there's two random red shirts that die and it has a counter. And then from the second episode on, the guy, and I think somewhere on the website you can still find the link. It's like, hey, you want to be a red shirt in this? I'll draw you in the show as a red shirt who's gonna die.
Nice.
And I know in interviews he's talking about, he's like, yeah, I'll probably never get through all the people who sent me submissions.
Aw. Was this like a thing on commission, or was it just goodwill?
I'm not sure. It seemed like it was just goodwill just for fun.
That's nice.
Yeah, but it's like, that second episode, I think there's two red shirts who die that were based on people, but then in that Star Trek video, there's like a whole nine.
Yeah, yeah. And we get the angels at the end in a nice parade. Yep. And there's even
their names and everything.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
Representation.
I will say, before we get into the comments, that my favorite moment happens at the end of the Star Trek video, when not content with breaking...
Oh, yes. I was waiting for someone to bring this up.
Not content with Nichelle Nichols breaking new ground in being part of one of the first on-screen interracial kisses in American history. At the end of this cartoon, she in silhouette, or at least her cartoon cave woman version. This is such a fucking stupid cartoon. Anyway, Flintstones Uhura and the fucking Dino Klingon share a lovely kiss in silhouette at the end of the cartoon, and I thought that was quite sweet. And also comes out of nowhere.
Fucking disgusting.
Look, Alex, your prejudice.
Dino is a dog!
Dino is a dinosaur, quite obviously.
Yeah, it's meant to be like a dog in the Flintstones.
Are you calling Klingons dogs?
I mean, they look like the dog stand-in in the Flintstones.
Look, that kind of talk...
In this.
That kind of talk about Klingon is going to get you experiencing a lot of beige, alright?
It is most dishonorable.
I was about to make an honorable joke, thank you.
Well, speaking of honorable jokes, I think we have time for a few comments from the YouTube uploads.
Yeah, which is kind of surprised how few comments there were on most of these episodes, but the first one has quite a number of them.
It's because nobody fucking watched these, let's be real.
Yeah, but apparently the people who did, most of them really sure loved it. I don't know why.
Yeah, true.
Most of these YouTube's uplinks were somebody... with the permission of the creator, recorded them off the Flash animations and just combined the part one and twos together and uploaded them about 6 years ago, it looks like.
So I'll start, which is one. Josh Gellis, 1 year ago, commented on this and said, excruciating bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
Alex, you want to take the next one?
Dendarker, 4 years ago. That was bad, but it captured the style of both shows extremely well. Kudos. Sure.
I have one from 3 years ago from Rick Devey, who says, is that the best they could do with the Sulu character?
I agree. We get like one line in a pretty good George Takei voice, and that's it.
Yep.
Brian Matthews, the creator of Stone Trek, commented on this and said, I'm always on the lookout for new commentary about Stone Trek, and I believe I have made a niche for myself in the Star Trek pantheon. I mean, that's...
Okay, Brian.
I mean, that's definitely true. I can't think of anyone else who spent a lot of time and effort on a cartoon Flash parody of Star Trek matching it up with the Flintstones. So as niches go, that's the very small one, but it's still a niche.
We have an incredible username, Bacon420.
Oh, epic.
1 year, epic bacon. Epic bacon, my good. Anyway, I remember when these were fresh on the web. I visited my grandmother while on vacation from work once in 2000. To show her the coolest show I had ever seen. That poor woman. Stone Trek, LOL.
Yeah. And there's one last comment that I wanna bring up, which is from Jim Jenkins, the writer, who commented on the Star Trek in episode and said, "Sorry, but no, we stuck to the original series. Brian wanted to combine the Next Generation with the Jetsons and call it the Treksons. You'd have to go to his website to see all the crazy mashups that he created. Jim Jenkins, writer, Stone Trek." And we did, and we saw Toilet Trek, and now we can't unsee that.
Unsee Toilet Trek, yeah.
But yeah, that was that was Stone Trek.
I do want to add this last comment that was on the last episode of this ever made, that where this was from the Lena Wee Trekker 2 years ago, who said, "Endless shameless crossovers. I loved it." I'm glad you do.
Yeah.
This person loves the MCU.
Yeah. There is an interview that was done, a fan film factor with Brian Matthews and Wally Fields, Wally being like the voices guy, which is pretty interesting. Like they talk pretty extensively about the process and how Brian convinced Wally to work for free and so on.
Brian, no, Wally rather. The guy did the voices, right? Wally.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. Don't work for free.
It was a labor of fan love.
He should have got paid. He should have got $1,000 for this bullshit.
Anyway, I think that's going to do it for our cartoons for the day. but we do have time for a couple of emails, if you're okay sticking around with us, Kurt.
Of course.
Okay, so in our previous episode, we asked our Flasheteers to email in and tell us about, terrible, horrible classic monsters. Which of them do you think you could take on and fight? And Kurt, I'd like you to read this first email. This is from Celia.
Fuck the banshee, she ate shit. I will slap a noisy bitch. Celia.
That's the best email you've ever gotten. Incredible. Thank you, Celia.
Wonderful. Love it.
You're my favorite now. Good.
Alex, if you want to take this one from Anonymous?
I would love to. I always thought the Frankenstein's monster would be pretty easy to square off against, since he's a big wimpy baby man who's scared of fire and has the approximate walking speed of my nan.
Oof.
He hated water as well, right? Remembering that
wrong? I thought it was just fire he was scared. I don't know.
Maybe it was fire.
It's been a long time since I have Frankenstein.
I don't remember.
Let's see. Troy emails in. Hi, Troy. Troy emails in and says, "I think I could take a werewolf. It's true that they're pretty big, but I've been practicing taking on big things. It will also be cool if I end up getting bitten or scratched, because then I will also turn into a werewolf, which will make me cool because werewolves are cool. I think the hardest part would be near the end, because I've heard that some werewolf..." Oh, for goodness sake, Troy. I'm not reading the rest of this email.
I was like, where is this going?
Very blue,
because you
apparently
started with, "I can..." Not "I can take it on." It's like, "I can take a werewolf." I was like, yeah.
Troy, go to your room.
Okay. Troy?
Go to AO3.
I was about to say, have you got something you want to tell the class? But they quite obviously really want to tell the class all about how many werewolves they could take.
The last line of the email is, "It's a good thing this prompt wasn't about fighting monsters, because I definitely couldn't do that. I would die immediately."
Good. Excellent. I mean, you'd probably die immediately from the other thing too, but yeah.
Oh dear. Okay. And finally, tell you what, Kurt, you take this last one from longtime Flacketeer. This is Arp.
Yeah, okay. "I am not terribly picky. I think I could take any monster as long as they were civil. My technique would be to start with a dinner and..." Oh, you meant in a fight. "In that case, I would say anything that is roughly shaped like a dog or a cat, I could likely hold my own with. I used to work in a veterinarian clinic, and that combined with my one ill-advised semester of wrestling in middle school meant I had a knack at being the poor sod who had to restrain the animals for their treatments. But Arp, I hear you say somehow. Don't worry about it." Oh, hang on, let me reread that. "But Arp, I hear you say somehow. Don't worry about it. Doesn't that rule out anything more than a medium-sized entity? I once had to restrain a full-grown, purebred Irish wolfhound and a concussed deer. Different days, thank God. I could handle putting a Cthulhu dog thing in a chokehold. One of the cylindrical things has to be a breathing tube."
Wow. Thank you for that really unpleasant mental image there, Arp.
Wow.
One of the cylindrical things has to be a breathing tube is definitely the first line of at least one horrible horror story. Ah, dear. That was great. Thank you very much. So I do have a prompt for our Flash of Tears, but first, Kurt.
Yes.
Have you given any thought to what classic folklore monsters you would be able to take in a fight?
Classic folklore monsters.
Because I think I could probably deal with a vampire pretty well, depending on the lore. Because if there's one thing that I really enjoy, it's just being covered in garlic at all points in my life.
You know that. I think I could deal with that too, because I don't invite strangers into my house anyway, so you know, he's staying out on the porch.
Yeah, just don't leave the house.
Can I come in? Absolutely fucking not. You cannot come in. Never.
It's like, no, get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Alex, what about you?
I think if I had a golf club, I could probably... You know, gnomes aren't very tall, so... One good swing would probably do it.
Four, thwack.
Take this, David.
Exactly.
Did you say take this, David?
David the gnome.
okay. that's gonna bring us to our prompt for next time. And in honor of Stone Trek, I would very much like to hear from our Flash of Tears. Hey. If you were doing a nerd series where you're mashing up two things, what would you be mashing up? Tell us about what the best or worst combinations would be.
Oh boy!
And if you write in a good email, maybe it'll go on a threadless T-shirt or something.
I was about to make a similar joke. Excellent.
Yeah. Or you can just like email in about other stuff. You can always suggest things for us. We get lots of suggestions. We're pretty much entirely suggestion run by now, which is lovely. Because it means that we're always covering stuff that you folks want us to cover. Other comments, corrections, letters of love, of hatred, of indifference. Email us. Take time out of your day to tell us that you're not really fussed. That's fine too. but any emails, they can go to flashinthepancast@gmail.com. I believe that is going to take us to the end of our episode and our wrap-up stuff, which means that, Kurt, it's time for you to tell us where we can find you online and what we can look at that you have been involved in.
Okay. As I mentioned at the beginning, I am the editor for a Power Rangers fan podcast that my partner and their best friend host. It's called Ranger Splain. You can find us anywhere podcasts are for Ranger Splain. I mostly handle the editing, but I've done a lot of fun stuff on that. Outside of that, on my own, most social media, I'm either at the THE Great SG, GREATSG. Find me on Twitter there. Which is mostly just my own, like, random shit posting and sharing fun things and such. For my Perler pixel art stuff, I do that on most places as Great SG Creations. That's what it is on Instagram and Tumblr, which I need to dust the Tumblr off, start using it more. And my store, if you like my stuff, you can purchase something on greatsgcreations.square.store. And I have a Twitter account for that, too, which is... Great SG Pixels.
Super, thank you very much. Alex, where can people find you online?
kind of said the same thing last time. Twitter is slowly dying, a very slow and not merciful death. But you can still find me on there if you really must follow me. Twitter.com/DEX01. I honestly, at this point, would rather you follow me at cohost.org/DEX01. I'm on there. I haven't really posted very much because it's a new thing and that terrifies me. The idea of no character limit is terrifying.
It's beautiful. It's liberating.
It is. It is also, it's beautiful and liberating, but also, like, the fact that I could just easily, like, word vomit is terrifying. But yeah, I'm a co-host. Also, I do streams every weekend with my good buddy Vile at twitch.tv/vilemoon. And if you go to alexvalentine.card.co, you can see all my music and video stuff there.
Awesome. And as always, you can still find me on Twitter at Gertrude Perkins. That's Gertrude P-R-K-N-S. I'll probably be other places too at some point, but, you know. You can find the podcast on Twitter at FlashITPancast. That's at FlashItPancast. Also, there's our website, flashandthepancast.com, where you can find all the cartoons we've talked about today, as well as a master list of everything we've ever covered. Wow! We've got now 89 episodes? So there is more than enough to satisfy your cravings if you want to go into a big, deep archival dive. And if you've really enjoyed this and you want to support us, the best way you can do that is by telling your friends. Share us in wherever you are. Like, spam the group chats, you know, all that good stuff. Like, just tell people that you think would like us, that we exist, and maybe link them an episode or two, because that's the best way to spread the word. If you would like to support us with more than just goodwill, if you want to do that with actual human money, then we very much appreciate that, because this podcast does take a decent chunk of time and a decent chunk of effort for every episode, and I'm in work and study. Alex is in full-time work, so any assistance we can get is absolutely adored and very appreciated. And you can throw money at us at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/flashinthepan. And if you do that, you not only can you get early access to episodes, but also if you chip in a bit more, you will get access to our lovely, chill Flash in the Pan Discord community. Isn't that nice? So, thank you, as always, to Alicia E. Goranson for our web hosting. You can find her writings and recordings at alicia-goranson.com. All this leaves me to say is, hey, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me here. This was a lot of fun.
It was great fun. Thank you very much.
I think
much.
It was fun.
It has been a lot of fun, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun, and also Alex got very upset, so it's double fun.
So it's a normal episode.
Yeah, revisiting something you watched a handful of times in high school is an experience.
Oh, it really is.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's what we're all about. So that remains for me to say that until next time, thank you for listening, Flash for Tears. I have been Tom.
I've been Alex.
And I've been Kurt.
And apologies, Captain, but my ears seem to be swelling at an ever-increasing rate.
I'm beaming off this ship.
Have a great flash.